Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us, and we appreciate your being with us, and we also appreciate it when you frequent our sponsors and supporters. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
And in a little while, hopefully, we'll have Major Dave Goetz joining us. He's off doing something for a short while, but he will be joining us soon. Mary, you wanted to take us in the direction of the appointments that President-elect Trump is making.
I think we need to spend a little time on that. I'm going to start off, just by saying that an article that I read pointed out that Matt Gaetz has been under investigation by the Department of Justice for 3 years. They've never charged him with anything. They just keep investigating. Does anyone honestly believe if there was something really horrible there that they wouldn't have brought it up long before now?
It wouldn't even have to be horrible. It would just have to be the tiniest little thing they could hang a prosecution on. And the fact that they haven't done it, tells the whole story. They have nothing on him that they think will pass muster.
Well, surprise, surprise, today there was a report of a leaked report.
Yes.
From an underage woman who supposedly had intimate relations with him and illicit drug use.
Yeah, the 17-year-old.
Yes.
The files have been hacked. We're waiting for them to be leaked.
Surprise, surprise.
Even if Congress doesn't release them, the House doesn't release them.
The New York Times will show up. They'll do the job.
Well, I agree with MTG. What's her name?
Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie Taylor
Greene. Marjorie. She says, if you're going to release his, let's release them all.
I agree.
And let's show how many Democrats have been paid off their accusers in the secret slush fund, and I think that should be open records anyway.
We're not sure if this was true or not, but apparently Senator Dick Durbin is the source of the leak.
We don't know that.
Even though it's supposedly he was the one that squashed the Epstein list, so. But
There's not a double standard there or anything like that.
What was the name of the guy that was having the affair with his with his secretary, who was a Chinese spy?
Oh. Swalwell.
Eric Swalwell.
Swalwell, yeah.
Fart boy.
Yeah, and he's still there.
And he's still he's not on the Intelligence Committee anymore, but he was.
But nobody investigated him for treason.
The Democrats were in charge.
Oh, silly me.
Well, you know, I think
they don't investigate each other.
Guess we'll get to have his day in court, so to speak, when he goes before the Senate. Trump.
Gaetz.
Anyway, Trump said that he would continue to support him. He's not pulling back, and that's great. That's good. And I'm looking at, again, we get to this issue. We always get into it with the Democrats. If they can't win on the quality of the person or what the person's going to do or the issues, what do? They bring up personal attacks. They did it with Kavanaugh. Now they're doing. And the thing is, I'm looking at, will he make a good attorney general? That's the question. And that's the only question we should be looking at. These other things from the past, if there was evidence, like you said, it would have been pursued.
Do you think he will? Do you think he would be a good...
I don't know him that well, but the people who know him and said that he's very knowledgeable and he's very intelligent, I think he will. And I think he's certainly against this using the Department of Justice to go after your political opponents. I mean, if anybody would want to fight that, he will.
You know, I think...
And that's the critical thing for the country. I mean, that's what I'm concerned about, not something he did or didn't do 20 years ago, whatever it is.
I think somewhere along the line, the problem is that he has asked the right questions, not the wrong questions, not the superfluous questions, but he has asked the right questions, and that's why you've got to get him out of the way.
Well, this tactic has worked. They tried it on Clarence Thomas. It didn't work. They tried it on Kavanaugh. It didn't work. But they've tried it on other people where it's worked, and it needs to not be a tactic.
Yeah, and the only way to defeat it is not to let it win. And the other thing, too, we opened up this segment about talking about Trump's appointees or nominees for his various departments. I think they're terrific. I mean, let's put him aside a minute. But the rest of them, I mean, they all seem like very competent people and people that he can rely on to fulfill his promises to the voters. That's what we voted for.
That's why they don't like him. They don't want him to fulfill his promises.
That's why we have to support them.
Well, almost all of his appointees have come from successful businesses. They've been competing with one another in the free enterprise system, as free as we have it now. But they're not groomed within government.
And none of them are from within the agencies they're going to supervise, which is absolutely critical.
Yes.
You cannot appoint somebody who's been in an agency for their career and expect them to be anything but loyal to that agency and the other people in that agency.
You've forgotten Pete Hegseth.
He wasn't in the Washington. He was in the military, but that's not.
That's the agency he's being called.
He wasn't part of. He was. That's a stretch, I think.
Well, the thing that is interesting about him is when you read or listen to the mainstream media describe him. Well, he's a talk show host. Well,
he's a weekend anchor.
He's a weekend
anchor. That's a step down.
Okay. So, you know, they failed to mention Princeton, Harvard, and a number of medals from serving overseas. You know, they tell us what they want us to hear. And unless you've signed into alternative media by now, you have no idea who these people are. They're just telling you, you know, well, he's not qualified. Well, I don't know. I think people who graduate, as much as our colleges are not everything they should be, people who graduate from Princeton and Harvard have a few brain cells.
The one that could say they're somewhat of an insider is Holman, right? I mean, he's as close to being in the mix with his appointment or what will hopefully be a final appointment.
But interesting with Holman is he doesn't have to be confirmed.
Oh, I didn't know that. But he's shown who he is. He has shown that he wants to enforce the border. So he's not going to play with the good old boys who say leave it wide open.
And one of the things that really is exciting or should be exciting for all conservatives is Trump's desire to use Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to look into the efficiency of the government. What does he call it? The Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE.
Yeah.
Is going to be.
I'm most excited about DOGE.
That's got such potential.
Anybody know what the word DOGE means?
Yeah.
No.
Department of Government Efficiency.
No, the word. There's a word, DOGE. Mm-hmm. It means the ruler of Venice was the DOGE. So now we have a new ruler, Government Efficiency. Dun, dun, dun.
And I think he's gone after the, what is it?
Thank you, Pat.
You're welcome.
Gone after the World Wrestling Federation for Mrs. McMahon to take down the Department of Education.
Let it down softly.
She was from New Bern originally?
Yes, I saw that.
I didn't know that.
I want to go back to this Department of Government Efficiency a minute. Rand Paul has always done his little list of interesting expenditures by the government. Some of the recent government expenditures, they wanted to see whether gin or tequila makes a sunfish more aggressive. They spent $100,000 on that.
That's a lot of gin and tequila.
Must have been Patron.
They also spent $750,000 to find out if Neil Armstrong said one small step for man or one small step for a man. The study was inconclusive. They spent $1.5 million to encourage video gaming in New York. And they gave $388,000 to Columbia University, $249,000 for the Baltimore Symphony. This is the kind of thing that needs to go away quickly.
Well, to me, it's very easy. If I were president, I'd go in and I'd cut every one of the agencies by 10%. And I would make them the next year justify every dollar in their budget request. What they normally do is they resubmit the one from the previous year and then talk about adjustments to it. They ought to be go back to what they call zero-based budgeting, where you have to go back and you got to justify everything in your budget. And I think that's the only way to get some accountability.
Well, what they're doing now is if they start out with a baseline, say of, let's just for the sake of argument, $100, and they want a 10% increase, and the Congress says, no, you can only have a 5% increase, then they refer to that as a 5% savings or a cut.
You're right. That's how the bureaucrats.
Well, that's the wife that goes shopping and spends $300 and says, "Look how much money I saved you."
But in the last few years, it's gone up 30%.
Yeah.
So, 10%'s pretty meek.
See, and usually most of these government programs, they never end. In other words, they start them and they just continue funding them. They don't have to justify. There should be an end to it. Then they have to come back and re-justify it and show from, you know, irrefutable data that the program is actually accomplishing its goals. But one of the other great things that Trump's talked about, and he said this again the other day, he wants to do away with the Federal Department of Education. That's an $85 billion expenditure right there.
But then
I think they had like 8,000 employees or something like that, some ridiculous amount.
But I wonder if he is intending on dismantling the Department of Ed. Why did he name someone to the cabinet
for
that?
Because somebody's got to oversee that. You can't just turn the lights off. You've got to start moving the functions that deserve to be moved to other parts of the government and then start doing the personnel drawdown.
I think it's important for everybody to remember that the Department of Education did not exist until Jimmy Carter, I believe in 1979. So this is not really a super long-standing organization. And data would prove that education has gone down ever since the federal government took control. And that it's not going to negatively impact education. It will give the responsibility of education back to the states.
Exactly. Right. And there's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that authorizes the federal government to control education.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Be right back.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. I'm glad to welcome Major Dave onto the scene. He was just able to call in. Major Dave Goetz, welcome aboard. And I'm going to quickly say he's retired military police, and we know him repeatedly as Major Dave, Vice President of the Research in the Electoral Education Foundation. And he knows how to dig for information. He served in the 6 years active duty as a sergeant in the military police, and went on to for military intelligence and security. And Dave, what else should I quickly, by the way, he moved out of state, but he still takes our data on a daily basis. He takes our election data from State Board of Elections, and he's analyzing that and watching for the the psychedelic changes in the information. Major Dave, that's, welcome.
That's not too far from wrong. Bob, I tell you, I so appreciate all my friends down there in Craven County, the Coastal Plains down there. I've enjoyed coming down and talking to you over the years on occasion. And for those who don't know me, I got started in election integrity work back in 2016 when the state board reported three candidates receiving a negative number of votes. And I said, well, there's no ballot you can cast that generates a negative number. And in 2017, I went and met with the state board executive director, actually invited me to Raleigh, and she brought her five top deputies to that table. And I sat there with them for 2.5 hours. Going over all my findings in 2016. And that set the stage for everything that happened since, because the good Lord made sure that I had the experience of working with a database, working with criminal investigations, knowing how to analyze and dig for stuff. And if at any point, Bob, I had found something that made sense, I would have quit. But the deeper, the deeper I dig, the more I find. And that brings us to where we are today, because I started back in January. My data archive includes the state weekly voter rolls for every week going back to December of 2012. So I can now show patterns of data manipulation that have taken place every 2 years in these general elections. This not the discrepancies I find are not just in one election. It's not somebody making an oops or a goof. No, this happens in every election, and we cannot tolerate it going on any further. And my job is to expose as much of it I can to the legislature so they can take the remedial action.
You know, Dave, coming from IT myself, and I look at information in, I guess, information technology, I'm going to just use that broad terminology. Generally, when you've got data like this, it moves from one system to another system by data, not rekeying at each step of the way. And things that are assigned to a certain attribute, they stay with that attribute. Is there an easier way for me to explain that?
One of the things I do is I map any movement in the data. I need to archive when these changes take place, and is that a reasonable change? In 2018, let me just use that election as an example. Between the end of November, just 2-3 weeks after the election, and the end of December, 486,000 voter records vanished from the weekly file. Why did almost 500,000 records disappear? Now, it doesn't appear, when you just look at the raw file, that that's a big deal, because you don't see that. Why? Because it's offset with that pool of 16-year-olds who pre-registered 2 years ago that will turn 18 in 2019, that got dumped in there on January 1st. So the net gain is all you really see. You don't see that there were 486,000 disappeared and there was 125,000 or whatever that got added in. But that's what I've had to learn over 8 years is to how to break this down. I'll give an example from the current election. This year, we've added over 2,000 temporary overseas civilian voters. They register using what's called a federal postcard application. These voters did not give an overseas address for their ballot. I'm currently running a query on my computer right now. How many of these people voted? The address they gave for their ballot was the same domestic address they gave in Block 2 that determines their residency, which county and which precinct their ballot was going to be counted in. Well, if these people voted, they should all be challenged and thrown out because we cannot, and your Craven County Board could not verify their address, their overseas address. And if they're not overseas, they're not eligible to register using that federal postcard application.
And that postcard application should not be acceptable if the addresses are the same or the second address is blank.
In Block 2, it asks for the residence address, and in Block 3, it asks for the overseas mailing address, and then it says, in parentheses, must be different from Block 2. It says it right there on the face of the form. So why are these counties putting all these people into the system when they don't give the essential information that's needed to verify who they are, where they are, and their eligibility to vote in this election?
Major Dave.
Yes.
You gave a presentation to the North Carolina legislature recently.
I did not make a personal presentation, but I prepared a PDF document highlighting some of these discrepancies because I knew they were coming back to Raleigh yesterday, and so I sent it out to them on Monday so they would have it in their hands.
Now, has there been any response to that?
No direct response, but I will tell you the good news is that yesterday the House passed Senate Bill 382. Senate Bill 382 takes the State Board of Elections out from under the governor's control and moves it to the state auditor. The Senate came back into session this afternoon at 2 o'clock and are in the process of reconsidering that bill. If they pass it, then it goes to Cooper for signature. Now, he can veto it, but they have the votes to override a veto.
Well, you know, we have a couple races that are up for recount now. One of them is Jefferson Griffin. And in reading your document and following you through this whole cycle, it seems like there have been a lot of discrepancies and irregularities in same-day registrations and the votes when they were cast versus when they were counted. Could you tell us, is the counties that are having these discrepancies the counties that Jefferson is at risk of losing?
I have not yet sorted that report by county. I could do that. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
It just seems like it's the same counties that always have the discrepancies, and it seems like there's always convenient discrepancies found to make specific people lose. And, you know, the Supreme Court position is kind of an important one. Even if we lose that, we still have a conservative majority, but that's, no one likes to feel like an election was stolen, and that's not the only one. I understand that there's a couple other races that are also under contention, and if you could just help us understand the same-day registration process and how it was convoluted so that people listening know what we're talking about.
Okay. I can tell you my personal opinion is I would not take any number as gospel for any race that was on the ballot. The reason I can say that is because I trained 28 contest election monitors who sat there on election night. Each one of them was assigned two statewide races, and they were capturing those results every 10, 15, 20 minutes or whatever, so that we could build a chronology throughout the night of when these numbers were changing and which counties were making their uploads, because I was capturing the county status report. And that report indicates every time the counties make an upload to the state. And, of course, that changes every few minutes. And I have 30-some versions of that report that I captured between 7:30 at night when the polls closed and around midnight when they finally said 100% of the counties had reported. Well, that what we found, when you click on the View Contest Details button on any of those races in the upper right-hand corner, it will show you how many votes they got election day, early voting by mail or provisional. And then there's the contest details that shows you how many votes the candidates got in each county. What we found was during the night, those numbers were flipping back and forth between the two major candidates, but not in every county and not in every race. There was no flipping in the governor's race, but in the lieutenant governor's race, the votes flipped back and forth several times in the lieutenant governor's race in all but six counties. Now, that doesn't make sense, but when I put it against the data in the county status report, those changes were taking place after the county had made their final upload to the state that night. Who was changing it? Did somebody at the state board just intuitively know that there was an error? No, of course not. But the state board does not have the authority to change any number that the counties upload to it. Their sole mission is to aggregate all of these totals and come up with a statewide total and report it, period. And they did not. And that's what I am trying to make some of the attorneys aware of for the RNC, some of the candidates. I have had a text exchange for Jefferson Griffiths counsel, waiting to hear back from him. And we'll see where this goes.
Major Dave, you were starting to talk about how leadership of the election process could shift to the auditor, and we kind of shifted your direction. Could you finish that train of thought?
Well, the bill would become effective 1 July next year. Now, that's likely because Brinson Bell's under a contract until then or something, and I just don't know. But it will allow the state auditor to appoint the five members of the state board of elections. They will get a list of four names from each of the two major parties, Republican and Democrat, and he will pick three Republicans and two Democrats to sit on that board. This basically is going to take a lot of the partisanship out of it, and it will give increased importance to who we elect as state auditor in the future, because they will have such a key role. But the biggest thing is, and Dave Bullock, I know, has made this promise in part of his campaign, he is going to create an Office of Election Integrity under the state auditor's office that will actually formally do what I've been doing for the last 8 years, but make it a part of the legal function of his office so that we will have greater confidence in the accuracy and the transparency of our election data as it's being reported in future elections.
Major Dave, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters, and we will be right back.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Y'all ready for this?
The
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers, and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters, and we ask you to go and just say hello to each of those sponsors and supporters again. Major Dave, you want to continue a little bit on what happened in this last election, please.
Well, we were talking about the votes being flipped back and forth between the candidates throughout the night, and your listeners may find this as curious as I did. There was no vote flipping in the Tom Murray's race for the Court of Appeals, but there was vote flipping in all but six counties in Valerie Zachary's race for the Court of Appeals. But there was also vote flipping in every single county in the Jefferson Griffin Allison Riggs race for the NC Supreme Court Associate Justice seat. There's no pattern to this. Somebody was manipulating, and I don't know how many people they had working on it. Whoever was doing this, I doubt it was one person acting alone, because there was flipping in so many different races. There was very little flipping in the presidential race. There was no flipping in the first congressional district race. There was my flipping in District 7 and 8. I haven't done all 14. I haven't had the time, because I'm still capturing data on a daily basis, as you said in the introduction, tracking the changes that are taking place now as we move into this recount phase for that Supreme Court seat race.
And Dave, in all of these changes, at least from a data perspective, there is no record of who made the change or what the change, you know, the purpose of the change or who made the change. As far as I know, there's no records of that.
I would like to think that there is a log of who was logged in from what terminal and who made what changes. But if there's not, and that's one of the things that I would personally ask Dave Bullock to look into, is what type of auditing is built into the system internally, and then push him to make good on his campaign promise to have external oversight of their data operations. We're trusting the fox to guard the hen house right now. And I think the people of North Carolina deserve better.
That's really concerning. One of the other things that is concerning with the counts, and when you talk about the flipping of the votes, if it is a manual manipulation going on, it's been going on for years. It's not new.
Correct. And I have to, I can tell you that back in the second primary in May, and what triggered me to look for this was in Hal Weatherman's runoff with Jim O'Neill in the primary for lieutenant governor. They didn't flip the votes. They flipped the names at the top of the columns.
Huh.
And I included that in that PDF to the legislature.
So how are we going to certify any election with this stuff outstanding? And any investigation that's going on, can it happen prior to a certification, or is it too late?
I'm not sure what they're going to be able to do with it, quite frankly. This is more than that this vote flipping, because it happens in more than one election that I can now document, is a fatal flaw in the integrity of any numbers. When you can change the software on the fly on election night and alter which pool of votes goes to which candidates, how can we believe anything? We have to have that external oversight of these numbers, and I believe that Dave Bolick is committed to bringing that in through the state auditor's office when he takes the helm in January.
Now, is the major problem in the counties aggregating the various precinct information, or when the state is aggregating the various, all the counties?
Well, I have to conclude that it's happening to the data after the data leaves the county level. Simply because the county status report tells me that the county, for example, made their last upload at 8:30 that night, but then their data keeps changing three or four times after that.
Can the county challenge the data?
They should. But nobody has ever known that this was even a problem for them to be alert to look for it and see. So we're discovering new things now, new weaknesses, and that's been the whole purpose of the Electoral Education Foundation that Hal Weatherman created 2 years ago to give me more tools. I've had to buy a higher speed computer, an 18 terabyte hard drive, a much larger hard drive to hold all this data, a high speed printer so I can prepare professional looking documents for the legislature when I need to send information to them. We are still a work in progress, but nobody would have ever believed that it's as bad as it actually is. Bob, you mentioned earlier that 150,000 that don't have a driver's license. We added 525,000 new voters to the rolls this year. You're right, 150,000 of them don't have a driver's license. When I go in and check my database now, since I put these weekly files in there, I can go back and find out too many of these people used to be registered voters. They simply reactivated the account and made it active of voters again. But the curious thing is, they had a driver's license back then. They had a middle name back then. But in the record today, they don't have a middle name, and it says they don't have a driver's license. If that information was already in the file, why was it not brought forward when they reactivated the record? Why? Because especially without the middle name, it makes an accurate match between two records harder to predict, harder to presume. So there's some shenanigans afoot. I'm not going to, I can't candy coat that at all. And it needs some deep diving into the history of these data files over the last decade or more.
There was one thing I wanted to bring up, Major Dave, that is about the concern that a lot of people have about non-citizens voting. And with this influx of all these illegals coming into the country, and now you mention that the voter rolls, all of a sudden people dropped into the voter rolls and don't seem to be have all the information that they had when they were previously on the voter rolls. What sort of protection, or what are your thoughts about the citizenship verification process, its validity and reliability?
Oh, man, that's the billion-dollar question. Let me tell you that there is a data field in the state board's database for the birth state of every voter. And if they're not born in the United States, they use the two-letter OC for other country. Now, that doesn't prove they're a non-citizen, because we have dependents of military people who are born in overseas military hospitals, embassy staff in every country in the world. But what happened this year was the state board had to redesign the voter registration application form and to make room for the new parties that were recognized, We the People, Justice for All, No Labels, and the Constitution Party was even reauthorized. They did away with that block on the application form. So the one data element that even gave us a clue as to citizenship has now been deprived from us. And so we're going to push to have that put back on there so that we have a better place. One of the other changes, though, the legislature made last fall. Now the county clerks of court have to report to the Board of Elections any juror who asks to be excused on the basis of being a non-citizen. Why? Because the jury rolls come from the voter rolls. that person was not called to be a juror unless they were a registered voter. And when they stand before the judge and say, Your Honor, I can't serve on the jury because I'm not a citizen, then the county, the clerk has to report that to the County Board of Elections, who is then required to investigate and see if that person has ever cast a ballot. And if they have, then they voted illegally, and they're supposed to give that information to your local district attorney so that they can investigate and prosecute it.
I asked those questions of our experience in Craven County, and the current folks have never experienced that situation where somebody said they couldn't serve because they aren't a citizen. So they never pursued that avenue to make sure they were taken off the roll. But I did confirm that we understand that, and I believe it would be handled correctly by our staff.
But at the same time, we had signs at the polls in Spanish saying, if you are not a citizen, it's illegal for you to vote.
Right.
Why did that need to be there if there was no concern that that was happening?
Agreed. Your director of elections in Craven County is Denise. Isn't that her name, Denise?
No.
Susan Williams.
Susan Williams. Okay.
Yeah.
I know back when Melanie Ray was the director, she ran a very tight ship there in Craven County. And I hope this lady is of the same caliber and character.
She seems to be.
She appears good. To be, yes.
Good.
There seems to be also an issue with provisional ballots that were counted that shouldn't be counted. Can you address that?
For provisional ballots?
Yes.
One of the provisions that I got passed into law back in 2020 required the county by noon on Thursday after Election Day to at least give a count of how many provisional ballots had been voted in the election. We had candidates conceding races on election night with no knowledge of how many outstanding ballots were still in play. There have been three elections since, and they have yet to get the count right. This time, they're off by over 5,000 provisionals. When I look at the daily provisional ballot file, there are over 5,000 more records in there than there were on that Thursday noon, or the number reported by the state board. So they can't even count envelopes right. Or either that or somebody's manufacturing after the fact. I don't know. But I know that the numbers are not adding up. But the counties can either fully approve, disapprove, or partially approve. A lot of provisionals are cast because the person voted in the wrong precinct. Now, the wrong precinct might bring into question which county commissioner you're voting for or city council or something like that. When they partially approve it, they can still count the votes for the statewide races because county and precinct doesn't matter. I hope that makes sense because it's a very complex process. But every one of these has to be manually entered into the database, and they have to each be individually investigated, and then the staff makes a recommendation to your county board of elections whether those ballots should be counted or not. And once those that are approved are then fed into a tabulator and the votes added to the totals, and those not approved are set aside.
And we've observed that process here in our county.
Yeah. Major Dave, we're going to take a quick break again to hear from our sponsors and supporters. We'll be right back. This is CCT8 Wake Up Call Show. Stop in at East 70 Point for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern.
We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Thank you, folks, for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Major Dave, would you take us down the avenue of same-day voter registration?
One of the things that we track is how many same-day registrants are reported in the absentee ballot data file. That is a file that they started, the state board started publishing on September 17th or 7th, right after the first ballots went out in the mail. And they update that every day with the ballots that have been returned through Election Day. They don't publish the requests that haven't come back because they don't want to give the ballot harvesters a roster of whose door to go knock on to try to intervene and get hold of that ballot. Now, on election morning, they publish the entire list, and that's supposed to be available to the candidates to know who at least has requested a ballot that hasn't returned it yet, so they can get in touch with those voters in their district or their precinct and try to get them to the polls before 7:30. And that makes perfect sense. Only in this election, the state didn't do that. They didn't publish the full list until the next morning of November 6th. The absentee data file was not published the very next day on the 7th of November. But they resumed it on the 8th and reported it all the way up to the 16th, the Saturday morning after the canvass, the county canvass. Now, in that interim period, we have had 8,401 more same-day registrants show up in that file, some saying they voted as far back as the very first day of early voting. Well, where has that same-day registrant's record been for 3 weeks?
Or could they have voted twice?
Possibly.
And the other thing is, with requested ballots, I know at least three people who requested ballots who never got them, who had to come from out of state to come back to vote, including my sister, who she commented on your Facebook page on that, actually, but had to drive from Wisconsin back to North Carolina to vote because she'd never received her requested absentee ballot. And I know two other people that that happened to. So I'm not so sure that there's not manipulation going on with the USPS or postal carriers or post office box fillers. It just seems odd that there's a lot of people not getting their ballots.
And that's why we look at that data file, because it includes the date the ballot was requested, the date it was sent to the voter, and the date it was returned. And there are far too many who have the date requested in the file, but there's no entry for the date sent or the date returned for the by-mail ballots. Those all should be brought into question. Why aren't these voters getting the ballot they requested?
When someone submits a request for a ballot like that, is the party affiliation of the voter known to whomever's sending out the ballots?
Well, the party affiliation of every voter in that county is known to the people. I don't know if it's on the form itself.
So, yeah, what I'm getting at is that if someone was trying to manipulate it, could they single out a certain party registrants and mess with their ballots and not do it with another party? Is that possible?
It is possible. Yes.
But again, if you're not registered, we don't know your party in advance. But
a year ago or 2 years ago, when we had the COVID thing, and they were arguing over the validity of witnessing, having one witness or two witnesses or no witnesses, there was a discussion about having a scan. What do you call that? Like a UPC thing, a barcode thing on the envelope, and that barcode thing would indicate what party you were on.
Probably yes.
So I don't know if that went into effect or not, but that was in discussion, 2 years ago.
Well, you know, and this is just anecdotal evidence, but I don't even know that it was in North Carolina, but somebody was caught putting a hole in the ballot envelope right at the point where that document indicates the voter's party affiliation. And there were suggestions that there were people in the post office that were doing exactly that, crashing ballot of the party they did not favor.
I could see how that would be easily done.
Yeah.
So we got a mess.
It is a mess. And I can tell you, in 8 years, it's far worse than anything I would have ever have imagined starting out. Like I said, I started with three candidates getting a negative number of votes. But in 2016, we also had six counties that had more than 100% voter registration for their age-eligible population.
That's crazy.
And it wasn't Wake and Mecklenburg. It was Dare County down east. It was Clay County out in the mountains. I don't remember the other ones, but it wasn't your typical suspect counties.
And the unfortunate thing about it, Major Dave, is when I have spoken to various elected officials about the integrity of the voting process in North Carolina, they all told me, don't worry about it, everything's fine, the integrity is excellent, and so on and so forth. Seems very contrary to what you're telling us.
I think I'm sorry, go ahead, Major Dave.
Wait, because I've had some of them tell me to my face, I don't want to hear this because I won. They don't want to rock the boat.
What is the solution?
Well, I will suggest one thing that's very clear, and that is for your locally elected officials, your members of the House and Senate, ask them how many, because every month, I think it's every month, they get a roster of all the new voters in your county. They send them a welcome card to introduce themselves as their members of the legislature and invite them to contact them if they had any issues. They have a very high return rate by the post office of undeliverable as addressed.
Wow.
None of the members of, and I'm not going to name names, but I can tell you none of the members that I've talked to have a regular process for notifying the boards of elections that those letters were returned. Because when they get returned up in Raleigh, your county board of elections doesn't know it unless your representative or your senator tells them. That's another thing we need to add to this process to verify that we are validating these registrations at the point they happen throughout the year. Don't wait till the last week before Election Day to try to figure out if somebody's legitimately eligible.
And we know that the registration confirmation, they send out a postcard, and if it gets returned, they'll send a second postcard to validate that person. But if I received them at my house and I was less than aware, I might throw those things away, and therefore I'm validating somebody who doesn't live at my address.
Maybe so, but then if you go to vote, it would show up on the computer as inactive, and you just have to validate information on your voter registration to reactivate. So there's still a third way to get you to vote. But
well, that's true, but you're right. When they fail that address verification, they're not removed from the voter rolls, and they stay there. They will have to miss two more federal elections. It will take 4 years with no response, no activity by that voter before that number will actually be, the status will be changed to removed.
And as you said earlier, and it's not deleted from the rolls, it should be available to reactivate in certain situations.
I just feel like that's deja vu with you go to bed thinking one thing and you wake up to something else. And this Jefferson Griffin race really has me upset because he was winning by a substantial number. And that's an awful lot of votes that just kind of got found after the fact.
He was up by over 7,000 votes on election night. Wasn't even close. And my last count this morning is he is now down, I think, 600 and some, 600 or 700 votes as these other counties continue their recount. So we'll see how the numbers play out.
And as I understand, the recount is just running the ballots through the tabulator. It's not stepping back through all those decisions to make it a standard ballot. So I can't imagine the numbers changing much because they are just retabulating them, best I understand.
It's provisionals and would be coming in that wouldn't have been tabulated like that.
No, the provisionals get tabulated when the board looks at them at each county. They decide if they're going to accept them or not, and they're run through the tabulator. Mm-hmm. That would end up being in that group.
And by the way, I believe the problem is not in the 25 counties that were greatly affected by Helena. Those counties are not the problem.
Correct.
Well, thank you, Major Dave, for what you do for us and giving us insight and understanding to the process that is way beyond confusing.
Yes.
Well, it is, and I have to be honest with you. It's taken me these 8 years to build relationships with these members in the legislature because typically you only get 3 to 5 minutes to plead your case. We've been talking for almost 45 minutes now, and I've only scratched the surface. There's very little that I could tell any one of them in 3 to 5 minutes that really begin to portray the full breadth and scope of the deficiencies that we're documenting. But I am grateful for those who have followed me over these years. I can tell you the State Senator Warren Daniel, who is the co-chair of the Joint Election Oversight Committee in Raleigh, called me to his office last fall when I submitted my white paper with my 12 recommendations for these policy changes. And he sat with me in his office for 90 minutes. Unheard of. He's a West Point graduate. He's an attorney, a military veteran. He understands my mindset, and we were able to go through that document page by page and line by line, and him with his lawyer's yellow legal pad taking copious notes all the way through. And thank the good Lord, he got 5 of those 12 measures passed into law last fall in Senate Bill 747. So at 3 in 2020, you know, we got here by inches, and that's what people have to understand. There is no magic wand you can wave. We're going to go back the other way by inches. And that's why I've stayed committed to this over the last 8 years, and we'll continue to do so, and we'll do anything I can to help Dave Bolick in his role as state auditor put in the system that can do what I've been doing, but do it on a formal basis that has legal standing.
And can you reposition those 3 or 4 that has not made it in for at least reconsideration to somebody in our local government?
I know that the other 7 remain under consideration by him. We're actually blessed to see them taking action right now with Senate Bill 382 I mentioned earlier, because they have the votes to override Cooper's veto, which we can expect him to do. After January, when the new legislature is sworn in, they will not have a supermajority in the House. They will be 1 vote short.
Yeah.
They'll have it in the Senate. But to override a Josh Stein veto, they're going to have at least 1 Democrat cross the aisle and vote with the Republicans to override a veto. So they're taking advantage of having that supermajority now to get these necessary changes in. And putting it under the state auditor's office is going to reassure every one of us in North Carolina that we're going to have the external oversight that this system is sorely needed for so long.
Major Dave, can I ask you to summarize the whole thing in about 20 to 30 seconds? We've run out of time, and I appreciate very, very much so your being with us.
Well, I'm honored to be here, Bob, and I will just say that people should be rest assured. There are a lot of people out here working on this election integrity issue. We're making progress, and we will continue to do so on your behalf. And we can't like I said, there's no fast cure, but we're going to keep plugging away and chipping away at it and eventually get us back on the path of full transparency so that the citizens can have confidence in the integrity of the elections and the validity of the outcomes.
Thank you, Major Dave.
Again, folks, thanks for staying with the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you.